What's up, Panther Nation? Welcome to episode 104 of the Four Man Rush podcast. Today we're going to break down the upcoming week 6 matchup, home game against the Minnesota Vikings. So we'll get right into it this week, said everything we need to say about yesterday's loss to the Eagles. So let's start looking forward and look at these Vikings. We'll start today with Smooth, whose pops has been a diehard Vikings fan for years. So this is a team he's been real familiar with, very familiar with their offensive line, you know, what they've been doing this season, the strengths and weaknesses. So, Smooth, can you kind of give us a breakdown of what kind of team we're looking to face this week, the 2-3 Vikings?
Well, offensively, facing a really good team top to bottom. Most people know about their high-quality receivers and Adam Thielen and Justin Jefferson. And then pretty solid quarterback, Kirk Cousins. We all know him. But I think the strength of this unit is really just the offensive line. They're deep all across the board, first string and second string. Quite a few players that we were high on that we were hoping to draft. You got guys like Garrett Bradbury, the center out of NC State. He's been one of the best centers in the league since coming in. They're pretty solid on the outside at tackle with Brian O'Neill. I don't know if y'all remember him getting drafted in the second round, but he's one of the more athletic guys in the league, 6'7", ran a 4.8 40. You know, so he's really good at blocking out in space. One of the games that I did watch was them against the Cardinals, and it's just like when you watch them try to establish their run game, they have a purpose. Like, they combo block really well. They get to the second level really well. I know Dalvin Cook is a really good, one of the best running backs in the league, but a lot of his success has to do with the fact that he's really getting touched, so he's about 3 or 4 yards upfield. So I think what they try to do week in and week out is establish the run game. Then that opens things up for them to get the pass game established. And like I said, they got pretty good weapons on the outside. So offensively, I think we're going to have to, for us defensively, we're just going to have to stick to our strengths and try to do something that we haven't really done that well the last couple of weeks, and that's stop the run game.
That's going to be critical this week. I mean, the Dallas, we know we gave up 245 yards. Eagles, we did a little bit better, but I think it was more about Philly not really committing to the run as opposed to us being effective stopping the run, because you look at that fourth quarter, I mean, Philadelphia pretty much ran the ball at will, whether it was read options with Jalen Hurts for those final two drives where they were able to run the clock out and end the ball with the ball in their hands, being able to convert first downs. I mean, Miles Sanders pretty much gifted us two extra 80 extra seconds just from running out of bounds. But that didn't matter because they were able to seal the edge. You know, guys weren't in their gaps, and they were able to run the ball effectively. That's going to be critical this week because I think they got a good 1-2 punch at running back with Dalvin Cook, Alexander Mattison. Dalvin Cook, I recall, on Saturday, he has an injured ankle, so he was trying to work it out pregame. And I feel like I think after he worked it out pregame, he just didn't feel like he could go full speed. So we'll see if he's going to be able to play against the Panthers this weekend with a week of rest on that ankle. But when healthy, I mean, you're talking about one of the top five running backs in the league, and he'd probably be higher than five. I mean, the guy's got vision, great contact balance, explosive, good open field speed. He's a dual threat back as well. Don't underestimate him as a wide receiver. So I think we'll definitely have our hands full with containing Dalvin Cook. Last year, I believe he got hurt actually in our game, so we didn't really get to finish it, so we didn't really get to see him for the full four quarters. And then their backup running back, Alexander Mattison, just as effective, you know, replacing Dalvin Cook. So establishing the run, I think, is something Minnesota will try to do against us this week. Now, as far as let's get back to their offensive line a little bit. I know Kev and Smooth. We'll start with Kev. Garrett Bradbury was a guy you guys had scouted 2 years ago, the center out of NC State, a guy we possibly were going to take in the first or second round. You know, can you tell us a little bit about what made you so high on Garrett Bradbury?
Yeah, well, excuse me. So for me, Big Smooth was the one that, you know, was putting me on to Bradbury and let me know there's a player up the road in Raleigh that, you know, is gonna be a really good one. He go to the league. So That was the first time I ever heard of Garrett Bradbury. So when I finally got a chance to watch him myself, immediately what sticks out on the film with him is the fact that, you know, he plays with control and poise. Like, rarely did I see him, like, get where he's in a bad position. You know, being center, you know, one instance of thing is you got to, you know, be able to handle the line calls, the shifts and everything. But with him, I like the fact that when he fires off on the ball, particularly in run plays, he has the ability to just really explode and to really get movement on the opposing defender in front of him. He's one of the few centers I've seen actually get to the second level with ease as well. So he's definitely someone that's going to definitely challenge our defensive tackles, whether we're in a 30 front or a 40 front. When it comes to pass blocking, you know, again, he's always looking for work. I've seen him a few times, like, pull a little bit and you know, help out on certain, not too often, but just show his flexibility, you know, kind of pull as a center and you know, to provide, you know, extra blocking. But primarily when it's in a pass blocking set, I just think Garrett Bradbury is just, like I said, like Smooth said, a top five center in this league. And I think that, you know, he's a player that owns the offensive line. Everybody gets their cue from him. He's going to give Derrick Brown and Daquan Jones and Bravon Roy and anyone else that lines up in the A gap, zero technique, one technique, possibly even two eye. I mean, anyone that's lining up with anywhere in his grabs is definitely going to fill him. But I think Bradbury is definitely one of the top centers. I would say, and Smooth, you can confirm that he could probably go right after your number one rack now. Would you say Bradbury would probably be number two?
It's arguable. He's top five. Still got a lot of good centers in the league.
As far as, like, young centers, though, like the new.
Yeah, young guys, yeah, he's definitely upper echelon, definitely. Mm-hmm. Honestly, he would have fit everything that we preach. You know, we like athletic guys. He was also a 4.8 40 running guy that can pull on screens. Had really good bench press reps. Like, he reminds me a lot of Ryan Kalil in the sense that he's a little bit undersized, but because he's able to use profound technique, he's able to be effective in pretty much every aspect of the game, whether it's run blocking, pass blocking, pulling. Very, very smart. So sending out those line calls, it's just everything that you look for in the center, he has. I don't really see a lot of flaws.
Hey, look at the depth of the offensive line as well. I mean, two more guys that we were high on coming out. So it's like they're continuing to build a deep offensive line because, you know, using ourselves as an example, guys get hurt often. So you always need guys that can step in and play right away. I'm looking at all three, really, Mason Cole, Wyatt Davis, and Christian Darrisaw. So, I mean, Smooth, what you think of those three guys as far as their O-line depth goes?
They were all on my board. I would have took Wyatt Davis over Tommy Tremble any day of the week. Christian Darrisaw, it was some things about his game I didn't like as far as just being consistent with his leverage. But still, every flaw that he has is fixable. The upside is incredible. So I think he getting selected where he got picked at was a pretty good value for them. As well as, if you just look at this entire unit, first string, second string, they're all second and first round picks for the most part, except for a couple of guys. I think their left tackle is some undrafted guy. We should be able to take advantage of him because he hasn't been very good this year. I think his name is Rashad Hill. But outside of that, they, like you said, just they do what we want to do. They actually invest in the offensive line early. They look for blue chip guys year in and year out. This shows. Because they always have one of the best run games in the league. And Kirk Cousins really always has a lot of time to throw the ball. That's why that offense is so explosive. We can't make any complaints about that Minnesota Vikings offense. Like, it's just it's one of the best offenses in the league, and it starts in the trenches.
Getting back to that Kirk Cousins and what we know from him, I mean, last year, I mean, he had him pretty contained for three quarters, but then that game-winning drive looked like he just couldn't miss, completed certain consecutive passes, had that comeback from behind victory against the Panthers. And I think Kirk Cousins has become a little bit underrated because he just hasn't been able to have that kind of playoff success and get, you know, get them over the top. But still, I think, you know, probably, I mean, I think 20, 25 teams in this league would like to have Kirk Cousins as their quarterback. Maybe not 25. I'll say maybe at least 20 teams would probably, you know, trade their quarterback right now to have Kirk Cousins. I mean, he's efficient, doesn't turn the ball over a lot. He's smart, accurate. You know, he's productive every year. You look at his numbers. I mean, year in and year out, he's one of the most consistent performers that they have. And I think what helps them out as well as their offensive line is the weapons that they surround them with. You know, they made the Stephon Diggs trade, but then they replenished that wide receiver room with Justin Jefferson, one of the best young route runners in this league right now. I mean, you know, one-on-one, you know, he can run the route tree, gets a lot of separation, you know, man coverage, you know, he'll get away from you, zone coverage. He does a good job finding soft spots there. He's great after the catch, you know, very, you know, fast, explosive, great athlete. So he's definitely a guy we got to keep accounting for this week. I think as good as Dante Jackson's playing, this probably be one of his bigger challenges he's seen so far this season. And then Adam Thielen, you know, he's getting up there in age a bit, but still very effective, you know, underrated route runner, sneaky athletic guy, great hands, and another consistently produces year in and year out. And they just surrounded them with guys, you know, KJ Osborne, D.D. Westbrook. So I think they also have a pretty sound wide receiver room. So, I mean, look at this offense. I mean, it's pretty solid. I think they're a lot better than their 2-3 record shows. Still early in the season. I think this is definitely a team we can't really take for granted despite their losing record. So with all that said, you know, what do you think the keys to victory for our defense is this week? And then we know Phil Snow kind of likes to play the soft boxes, play a lot of nickel package and defend in the pass. You think this week we should be more of a focused on stopping the run and, you know, forcing Kirk Cousins to throw the ball 30 to 40 times? What you think of that, Smoot?
Definitely, because with all of those weapons, you know, they got an old school coach, Mike Zimmer. I don't know if y'all remember, but he fired guys because he fired offensive coordinators for not running the ball. So they want to run the ball. That's always going to be number one on their priority list every single game. They're going to try to get the run game established, regardless of who's back there. So we got to make sure we make them one-dimensional and shut that down. That's the only way we really have a chance. Because if you close your eyes and you mess up a couple of times, they hanging 30, 40 points on your head easy. It's that type of offense. It's explosive in all levels. So passing, running, we got to shut down something. Got to make them one-dimensional. That's going to be the key to victory.
Definitely. I think, you know, we got those cornerback room full. You know, we got Dante, A.J. Boye played well, C.J. Henderson starting to get more and more reps. This may be a week where we go single high safety, play a lot more man coverage, and put that extra guy in the box to try to stop the run. Because, I mean, once Dalvin Cook gets going, I mean, that's the thing, when their offense is at their best, when they can stay balanced, you know, get the run game going, get the play action going. And they got good weapons on the outside that can generate those explosive plays downfield. So, Kev, what do you think about personnel packages this week? So we saw against Dallas, Phil Snow came out in a lot of 4-2-5 nickel looks. Wasn't really the best front to face against Dallas playing that heavy 12 personnel. So we're kind of oversized and outmatched and out-schemed in defending the run against them. You think we need to try to play more base defense this week or stick with the nickel packages that we've been playing more often the last couple of weeks?
For me, I think that with the type of offensive line they got, I think that Minnesota may try to mimic a lot more of what Dallas did with us. You know, like, you know, Big Smooth said, you know, in his introduction here, you know, they do a great job of double teaming and getting off to the next level, which is basically what Dallas did to us, double teaming our defensive tackles, getting the mood off the line and sliding out to our linebackers to create the lanes for their running backs. You know, and one of the successes of winning on the road is to come in with a strong running game so that, you know, your quarterback isn't forced to have to throw the ball 30 or 40 times. So, you know, for me, I like to see us play a lot more base. And I think this time around, you know, instead of playing the 4-2-5 nickel, you know, I like to see, you know, more traditional 4-3 style to just have some more meat up front to attack, because when we're the way we've been playing our 3-4, and a lot of the 303 fronts where we're trying to, you know, free up our linebackers. I think that, I think that with the ability to double team and get out to the next level, the way that Minnesota can emulate the what the Cowboys did, I think that's what created a lot of those lanes, was those isolation runs off guard, you know, those off tackle runs. So I just think that having four down linemen and three linebackers whenever they come out in base personnel. Now, how much base personnel they run, I'm not too sure, because I see that, you know, on the depth chart, they seem to be an 11 personnel team. But again, NFL is a copycat league, so I wouldn't be surprised to see them come out with two tight ends. I see they got a fullback here, CJ Ham. So, you know, for me, I'm not to negate their offensive firepower in the passing game, but for me, we gotta shut it down, because I feel like we're a lot more talented to handle their wide receivers with our secondary than we are to just allow them to just run it down our throats. So that's the type of personnel package that I like to see us do, is definitely more 40 front with our base packages to make sure we, you know, try to discourage them from running the ball on us.
Yeah, and you're looking up this website, Sharp Football Stats, a very good website where you can get a lot of analytics on the types of personnel packages teams run. Vikings are in 11 personnel 50% of the time. They're in 12 personnel about 12% of the time. And they also use a lot of 21 personnel as well, probably more in the red zone. 22, you see a lot of, and you see a lot of empty as well. So they're very balanced offense. So they're going to throw a lot of things at us. So I think we're just going to have to be flexible. And I think the key, you know, Phil Snow likes to make them adjust to what we do. So I think if you can get them behind the sticks and force them into those passing situations, you'll probably see him stay in the nickel packages that he likes to be in. But if we let them dictate and control, I think that's the point where you have to adjust and be more aware of that run game that the Vikings have. So when I look at their receivers, you got Justin Jefferson, Adam Thielen, KJ Osborne, three very capable wideouts. How do you like our secondary matchup? I know Dante Jackson's having a career year. He almost single-handedly put the team on his back and won it by himself this past week. I mean, we're working C.J. Henderson in there slowly. I thought A.J. Bouye played extremely well this past week, particularly against the Eagles' screen game. I know they came out looking to try to throw those quick screens. I thought Bouye did a good job playing downhill, making the tackle, and sniffing those out. How confident are you that these guys can follow up their good performance last week against Justin Jefferson and Adam Thielen, Smooth?
I mean, hate to be biased, but I'll take our DB room against anybody. You know, clearly we've invested in that group. So, cornerback, you know, we shouldn't have any issues with anybody. They're going to get theirs. They're great football players. Justin Jefferson, Adam Thielen, they're going to get theirs. But even Thielen just had a quiet week like yesterday. So, you know, it's not impossible to shut this receiver group down. It's not. And we have the talent to do it from top to bottom. That's how I feel. I was really impressed with AJ. I think he's going to carry that momentum into this week. You know, you think about it, J.C. Horn is hurt. You haven't gotten Gilmore in the field yet. But if you just look at Dante Jackson and AJ Bouye, that's a formidable group. Am I right or wrong? You know, it's, a lot of teams will take that as a starting group. So I don't think we're going to be weak in the secondary. One thing I wanted to add from the last point, though, is what Minnesota does like to do is, because of the type of dynamic back that Dalvin Cook is, instead of just loading up with double tight or extra tight ends and stuff like that, they actually want you to respect their receivers. So they play a lot of spread stuff, and they'll just run, you know, with a spread formation and just rely on those five guys up front to make holes for them. So they like to spread you out and still run the ball. So you got to expect them to run from damn near any personnel group. That's what they just like to do. You know, giving that man space actually is a benefit to how they get things done on the ground.
That's a good point as well. I think spreading them out prevents defenses from loading the box. And that's going to just give Dalvin Hill that much more space to operate in the run game. So force you to play nickel, put smaller players on the field, trust your offensive line to move guys off the ball. And that's how you create that space in those running lanes for Dalvin Cook. So I just think gap control, I think, is going to be key this week. I thought Derrick Brown had one of his better games of the season this past week against the Eagles. We need him to step up big this week. I think we just have to be better on the edge. I think that's kind of been where our weaknesses are in the run game. I thought Dallas hit us with a lot of off-tackle runs, and Philadelphia, more of a read option type stuff they were doing. But even on their normal run schemes, they were getting us outside, sealing the edge, and guys weren't being disciplined with contained responsibility. So gap discipline is definitely going to be another key for our defense to stop this Vikings run game as well. Now, on the passing side, you know, they have shown some little weakness in pass protection. I mean, you look at the pressure rates for quarterbacks. You know, we talk about how Sam Darnold is always under duress, but Kirk Cousins' pressure rate is at 23.5%, which is right in line with Sam Darnold. So he's under pressure a similar amount of dropbacks as Sam Darnold has been all year. So there'll be some opportunities to probably take advantage of to get after Kirk Cousins a bit this week. So what do you think about our matchup of our edge rushers against these tackles, Kev?
Like I said, depending on what front we use, 40 or 30, you know, like Big Smooth said, I'm tend to be biased. I like to think that Brian Burns would like to redeem himself. You know, Brian Burns was basically a non-factor this past game against the Philadelphia Eagles. And this was a team, if I'm not mistaken, and Smooth, you Big Smooth, you can verify from weren't both their starting tackles out. I know Lane Johnson was out, but wasn't there I think Andre Dillard started, who's coming as a backup.
He brought in Andre Dillard. He didn't give up a single pressure hit or sack.
Right. So, you know, there that is. So, you know, Brian Burns only had like two tackles. I think he had a tackle for loss, but, you know, he didn't have any of the pass, you know, disruption. Now, a lot of that had to do with, you know, Hurts throwing those quick screens, you know, out into the flats to wide receivers and running backs. Pretty much for a majority of the game until late in the fourth quarter. But, you know, I don't know how much RPO-type stuff they do with the Kirk Cousins, because I noticed that with the Eagles, the way they start getting us, because the way Hassan Reddick was, you know, coming in hard after the running back, that's what they pulled out and did. Now, you know, I've seen Kirk Cousins, you know, use his legs some, but I don't think that's something they will really employ. On the hair of it, they might do it one or two times to catch off guard, but yeah, I like to take our edges against them. Now, Utir Gross Models came back, got about 18 snaps coming off of, you know, his ankle injury. I like to see him more. I think that when we play a 40 front, I like him better as the 4-3 defensive end than I would a Hassan Reddick. I think this would be a game that we need to have a nice rotation along the edge, you know, to keep the pressure prying. So, you know, see more, you know, Marquise Haynes, you know, see more Morgan Fox as well. I just think that we just got to throw bodies, fresh bodies at this Vikings offensive line. Cause as you mentioned, 23% pressure rate. So, you know, we can generate the kind of disarray that our own quarterback go through on Kirk Cousins. I mean, hey, we've seen Kirk Cousins, you know what I'm saying, fuck it up too, you know, and give out gifts and everything. So I tend to want to favor us on the our edge versus their tackles in this matchup.
Yeah, just for get an idea, kind of pass plays they run. They've only run two. Cousins isn't the most mobile quarterback, so they're not really an RPO, you know, read option type team. You know, who's going to really respect, you know, that type of plays from Cousins, but they do run play action a good amount. He's thrown 28 play action passes this year. So, you know, I think it's more, but it's primarily a drop back pass offense. You know, Cousins will drop back 3-5-7 step drops. He hangs in the pocket. I think he's improved that aspect of his game, you know, moving around in the pocket, having good awareness there. He's going to get the ball out quick. And I think that's where that talented receiving group, Justin Jefferson, Adam Thielen, and KJ Osborne come into play. So, getting after him, forcing the quick throws, and I think that's going to be the key to stopping him this week. So I guess with far as, you know, overall, looking from it globally, what do you think the three keys to victory for our defense this week are against the Vikings offense? Start with you, Kev.
Well, the keys for me are pretty much similar to what it was this past week. Number one, you know, maintain our gap integrity on run plays, you know, not getting stuck on blocks, not getting moved out of the way, as I stated, you know, with Bradbury at center and, you know, with, you know, leading their offensive line, I really think that they can really emulate a lot of the same blocking schemes that gave us so much havoc and stress in Dallas. So we really got to be careful about that. Number two, I think that we need to get back to what we do best and putting our stamp on it, and that's applying pressure, disrupting the quarterback, getting them off rhythm, off target. You know, don't get me wrong, Kirk Cousins has been good, but we've also seen him have stretches where, you know, he's looked, you know, below average, you know, for extended periods of time. So I think we need to take advantage of that. And number three, just got to keep creating turnovers. You know, we had two interceptions. We got a safety, which should have been a touchdown, but that's neither here or there. I just think that we just got to, you know, find ways to, you know, create an extra, you know, three or four possessions for us by, you know, getting out to the ball and whenever the ball carriers do have it.
Okay, so that pretty much covers the Vikings offense. Look at the other side of the ball. Look at what they're bringing to the table on defense. You got two veteran edge rushers, been very good players in this league for a long time, Danielle Hunter, Everson Griffin. And they got pretty solid defensive tackle core as well with Dalvin Tomlinson and Sheldon Richardson. So you got a veteran D-line unit that's coming to town. We got Steven Weatherly, you know, as a backup. But, you know, I mean, as a backup rotational player, that's what Weatherly is. I think Matt Rhule and our staff had him come in here and try to make him a starter, thinking he could replicate what he did as a backup and double that production, whether he was starting with more reps. That's just not who he is. I think he's just much more effective and comfortable being a rotational player coming in, you know, letting Danielle Hunter, Everson Griffin get some Gatorade and get his cardio in. So Smooth, what do you think of this defensive line unit, and how is our struggling offensive line going to keep these guys contained?
Well, on paper, it's a really respectable unit. You mentioned today the guys' names, you mentioned their pedigree, but when I view this defense as a whole, it reminds me a lot of 2018, 2019 Panthers, where you got a lot of big name veterans, but I think that window of opportunity to win is past them. I think that's why when you look at their record, you see 2-3. A lot of that has to do with they're in shootouts. They had a shootout with Arizona, came down to their kicker missing a field goal. Their defense can't stop anybody. Not to say that we're going to come out and score 40, because we have our own issues on offense, particularly with the most important part, offensive line play. But if we can find a way, I don't know how you would do it, but if we can find a way to get some production out of our offensive line unit, we should be able to score a lot of points against this team. And we got to start taking advantage of opportunities as well. A lot of times we have opportunities to go down the field and score, and we don't, you know, turn the ball over, stuff like that, giving up sacks. So I think the key, you know, against this defense is they're not nothing to fear at all. You shouldn't have to fear them, but they got a lot of respectable guys. You know, Eric Kendrick's still very respectable. Harrison Smith still very respectable in the secondary, but I think that window of opportunity is closed for them. And they got a lot of young guys in the secondary, very young corners that we should be able to take advantage of, particularly with DJ Moore and Robbie Anderson. They both should have productive days because those young corners have been getting exposed for like the last year and a half.
Hey, look at the defense overall stats. They're 19th in yards, but they're 9th in points. That's to Mike Zimmer defense. They bend a little bit. They want to buckle down in the red zone, but they haven't done that effectively this year. I mean, they're giving up touchdowns on 75% of red zone trips, which you don't really see from a Mike Zimmer defense. So, Kev, how do you like how our offensive line matches up against this veteran Vikings D-line? I mean, oh, we've kind of been playing musical chairs at tackle past couple weeks. You got Brady Christensen, Taylor Moten going against, you know, savvy vets, Danielle Hunter and Everson Griffin. I mean, like Smooth said, it's not 2017. I mean, when these guys were just an unstoppable duo, but, you know, that's still a respectable force. You know, how do you think our tackles will match up against these guys, however we roll them out?
Well, personally, I hope we put Taylor Moten back at his spot. He looked real uncomfortable playing left tackle to me. You know, pretty much, you know, the first half of the game, I'll be honest with you, fellas, I I was specifically just kept my eyes going back and forth between Christensen and Moten just to see how they play. You know, excuse me if I say it wrong, Big Smooth, but Moten was showing a lot of right tackle tendencies at left tackle when I was watching him play, particularly came with his footwork, his movement. You could just tell that he's just so used to the right side. To me, he just looked really uncomfortable out there. So I hope that we, you know, move him back to right. But, you know, if they decide to trot this out again, you know, despite what PFF gave them, I think they graded both Christensen and Moten really high. I don't know what Big Smooth and came out with his grades yet or not, but they made some plays, but overall I saw giving up way too much ground too quick for my personal liking. Again, I just feel like if Christensen, if we're going to play him, let him play his natural at left tackle, let Moten play his natural at right tackle. I mean, at this point, you know, what else could hurt? How much more worse could we be at pass blocking than, you know, we is right now? If nothing else, at least give these guys a chance to feel comfortable and try to, you know, build up and, you know, slowly, you know, improve their abilities here. You know, even though the Griffin and Hunter are, quote, long in the tooth, I think that they're still more than capable and talented enough to disrupt, because I just haven't seen enough consistency from our tackles. I mean, even though Moten's our, quote, you know, leader and franchise lineman, I just haven't seen enough dominance for consistent long periods of time pass blocking off the edge to really feel like that they're going to, you know, put up a standout performance.
Now, we look at our offensive line struggles the past couple of weeks. Teams are hitting us with these twist stunts. And it looks like, are we getting beat up front because of being out physical and just losing one-on-ones, or is it more due to miscommunications and not communicating on these twist stunts? What do you see in that, Smooth?
Both. We're not athletic enough and definitely not communicating well, because reason I said it is I seen the twist stunt and Brady Christensen committed to his block and still got beat. So it's like, it's not as bad as it was last year when Chris Reed could never pick up a stunt. I mean, guys are picking him up, but we don't have the, it's not too much good I can say about this unit, guys. I'm sorry for being pessimistic, but nobody's really impressing me. Honestly, the most consistent offensive lineman on our team right now to me is Matt Paradis. Because Dennis Daly took a step back this week. So, you know, it's just every week somebody's, excuse my French, but somebody's fucking up every week. Every week is somebody different. We can't collectively, as a unit, go out and put a top-notch performance together. Why that is, I don't know. I think it's got something to do with the musical chairs. You know, just let guys play where they're comfortable at. You seen I posted on Twitter, Taylor Moten has played 98% of his career on the right side of the line, whether it was guard or tackle. I never seen Brady Christensen play anything else besides left tackle. So you come out there on Sunday with them in opposite spots and expect to have success. I mean, I really wasn't surprised by the performance. So sorry to answer your question about the twists and stunts and stuff like that. Communication is fine. I believe in Matt Paradis. I think he gives out the right calls. Guys just aren't executing.
Hey, you look at this Vikings front. I mean, Danielle Hunter through what we played 5 games now. I mean, he has 6 sacks, 10 quarterback hits. Everson Griffin, 4 sacks, 6 quarterback hits. They're getting to the passer as a unit. They got 17 sacks, 26 quarterback hits. So, I mean, they, guys have been productive in the pass rush, even though they had that slip up against the Arizona Cardinals. I guess Kyler Murray, I mean, trying to get after him is a challenge in itself, but I mean, the last couple of weeks, I think they played the Detroit Lions. I mean, it was a 19-17 ball game. So, you know, I think they come along a little bit still being productive at the defensive end position, even after all these years in the league. Let's talk about the interior O-line a little bit. I know Daly kind of ended his streak of 2 consecutive games where he was playing well. Paradis, I mean, he's been relatively consistent. I'll call him in the good enough category, but still – possibly upgraded that position down the road if we need to. And then John Miller, I don't know if it's the injury or what, but he's just been having probably the worst season I've seen since he's been in this league. What are your thoughts on the interior O-line so far, Kev? What are the problems you see there?
Well, the problems I'm seeing is that, you know, we're just getting bullied up front. You know, when you talk about John Miller, I mean, with him, he showed moments where he dominates, and then he showed moments where he gets dominated. And, you know, God help him, when he's trying to go out on screen passes, like, I rarely see him, you know, connect to get a chance. Like, when you get a chance to put one of these little small DBs on their ass and you keep missing, like, I don't know. It's just kind of mind blocking, but you know, this is why he's a career journeyman. This is why he can only get 1 year at a time. I mean, you see him play well enough to think, okay, he can, you know, be solid and effective, but then he just has those stretches where he just, you know, but like you said, that could definitely, you know, apply to, you know, him being injured as well. With Paradis, you know, he'll have this occasional moment where he, you know, does a what the fuck moment, but generally overall, he's been a C plus B minus type of player for us. Just steady. Like I said, there's definitely room to grow, definitely room to improve, but I've seen him, you know, pick up two blocks on a certain play. I've seen him, you know, get some, you know, a couple of pancakes here and there. So I definitely think that Paradis is, after Moten, is probably our most consistent consistent player. And then with the like I said, with Dennis Daly, I'm just you know, for him to revert back after two, you know, like I said, solid games. Like Big Smooth said, man, it's just like, you know, it's every week is somebody else. So it makes me nervous. Damn, it's just going to be a week where Paradis fuck up. Does Moten have another bad game like he did in Dallas? I don't know, man. I just really hope that, you know, whatever we're doing in practice is just going to eventually translate over to the game, because I can't, they're not coaching what we're seeing on the field come Sundays. I think that we got too good of an offensive line coaches. Whatever it is that when we finally get on the field and get with these players and, you know, realize what it is that it is, I think we practice against a damn good defensive front and practice during the week, going against a Derrick Brown, a Daquan Jones. So, whatever the disconnect is, I'm just hoping that we eventually get it figured out.
You know, to be honest with you, I don't want to sound like a pessimist again, but, you know, we talked about Daniel Hunter. We talked about Everson Griffin. But the strength of their defensive line is the interior. I don't know if y'all know, but Dalvin Tomlinson is one of the best three techs in the league. They also got another guy named Michael Pierce. He's 340 pounds. So we talk every week about Paradis not being able to get movement. It's not going to get easier this week. The strength of their defensive line is their interior. So between Tomlinson making plays, he makes a lot of plays in the backfield, and having a 340-pound immovable object like Michael Pierce, that's where it all starts. So the fact that the true weakness of our offensive line is the interior, and we face one of the best interiors in the league, you know, doing the numbers, it's just not looking too good for us. So somehow, some way, we got to coach around that. Like, so these guys got to find it somewhere. We got to find success somewhere. But it's not getting easier this week. That's all I'm saying. It's not going to get any easier. We're playing one of the best units out there.
Now, in his interview today, I know Vashti Hurt from Carolina Blitz asked Matt Rhule about Deontay Brown's progress. He said he had started the Senior Bowl. He was about 360 pounds, got down to about 340, and then Rhule just referenced that he's doing a good job losing weight. He finally made the active roster for the first time, so he had to dress for his first game against Philadelphia. And he's just going to start, you know, now he's going to be focusing on trying to earn reps and get in that rotation. I know Smooth has spoken on this a lot. Do you think Deontay Brown would be an upgrade over John Miller, or you think this should be a redshirt year for him, considering he spent so much time in his offseason just trying to get focused on getting his weight down as opposed to strength and conditioning, footwork, and those things, types of things?
I think he's a complete liability in pass sets. So I think he'll need an offseason just to improve himself as a player when it just comes to protecting the quarterback. Run game-wise, yeah, he would help us a lot right now. Right now he could come in and move guys off the ball. That's our biggest issue. We don't move guys off the ball at all. We don't get any kind of push up front. So you can tell me you can put Deontay Brown in maybe at a swing tackle or something. Just to get some movement, I'll take it any day of the week. Any day of the week, I would take it. That's where I like most about him is he's extremely effective in establishing run dominance. And we don't have that right now. So, yes, as far as the run game, he would be an upgrade from John Miller. To be honest, I wouldn't mind us leaning heavily on a run game if we had one because Sam Darnold's been making a lot of mistakes. So I think we got to try to take some pressure off him somehow. So, definitely, if you got a guy on the bench that can come help you get the run game established, bring him in.
Yeah, we still haven't have an update on Christian McCaffrey's status as of this recording, but that'll be a big addition to the offense if he's able to play this Sunday. Kev, as far as our offensive line going up against the Vikings front four, do you think we're putting out our best combination of linemen that we can possibly have, or is there some type of unit you think we can do some shuffling around that at least be able to put a serviceable unit together to get us through this season and maybe look to upgrade once we finish the year and start to head into the draft and free agency?
You know, I hate to be so pessimistic. That's like asking me, you know, what color of shit is the least one I want to hold? I mean, damn, like, it's just really that bad, man. Like, best unit for me moving forward, like I say, these young guys, like I say, just leave Moten at right tackle. Mitch, leaving Mill at right guard, I mean, hey, it's 50-50. You know, maybe we get 9 good games and games that we win and 8 bad games we won't. I mean, it's really like he really does put on a night and day effort, you know, with him. It's just hard to really speculate. Obviously, you know, Paredes is our only option at center because I definitely don't want to see no Tecklenburg, you know, come in. Far as left guard goes, man, it's pretty much Dennis Daly and John Miller pretty much the same. You know, you'll see 2 stretches and then you'll get a game like, what the fuck? So it's just really hard. And to be honest, in spite of how critical I was about the left tackle play over Brady Christian, but I'm too much at the point where I'd rather take my lumps with him getting experience at a position he's comfortable with than to keep playing this positionless football on the offensive line. I just think the offensive line, when it comes to your starters, ability to have this flexibility that Matt Rhule speaks of when it comes to your starters, I'm really not being a big fan of it. Now, as far as your depth and rotational players, because you only have so many, on Sunday, yes, you know, they had to play multiple positions, but, you know, let my left tackle, his strength be playing left tackle. Drafting a left tackle and got him playing right guard or right side of ball, it's just mind-numbing to me. I just really think that the way that Matt Rhule and Scott Fitter handled this offense line, when they look back at the season and think of the what else, especially if we end up missing out or whatever, or not having the success we have, they're going to look back at the decision they made at the offensive line as being like, yo, this is where we fucked up at. That's, you know, whatever our thought process was looking at offensive linemen and what it put on the field, I'd be hard-pressed to think that they, when they watch the film and have any less disgust than what we as fans have watching this offensive line play. Again, I know there may be good stretches that don't get mentioned. You know, you was talking about earlier, Will, how, you know, Donald, you know, what's frustrating about Donald is when you have a clean pocket, he's not connecting. But how often are these clean pockets having, you know, with the, with the pressure rate? You know, I think I shared something on our Facebook page showing that for the second time since 2018, the Eagles had you know, over, I think it was four different players with over six quarterback pressures. Like, our offensive line is allowing pressure rates to happen at a record performing pace. You know what I'm saying? So, it's just a hope and pray situation at this point, because, you know, because Deontay Brown's not ready, and I'd rather think of put him, save him for long term than to try to ruin him or get him overexposed or possibly hurt because he's not ready. Like you said, focus on, you know, conditioning and things like that. We just got to hope it eventually works out with what we got and try to scheme around the best we can.
You know, I would probably throw Trent Scott at guard over John Miller at this point, since we just going to put guys anywhere. Put somebody out there that's nasty. You know what I'm saying? You know, Trent Scott is an aggressive player. Put him at right guard at this point. Just, since we don't care about where guys play in particular, just we throwing guys out there, just throw Trent Scott out there too. Let Brady take his lumps at left tackle. Throw Trent Scott at one of these guard positions. Let's see how that goes. We tried everything else, right?
I know, Kev, you can pull this up. What I'm talking about, a Duke Manyweather, one of the O-line expert. He runs O-line Masterminds Camp every year, which professional linemen come to network with each other, learn techniques, study different edge rushers, and try to advance the O-line position. You know, one of his guys was Brady Christensen, and he tuned in to watch Brady's first start this week at right tackle and was watching Taylor Moten and was watching Christensen and made an observation. And you have his tweet pulled up by any chance? Just tell everybody what he said about the Panthers shuffling around offensive linemen. Because one of Duke's biggest criticisms has been that even professional coaches don't know how to coach offensive linemen, and they think that switching positions and shuffling the linemen around is just not in their best interest. You know, guys are used to a certain technique, playing a certain side. They spend all this time perfecting it, and then coaches just try to shuffle them like musical chairs, throw them out of position, and wonder why these guys struggle and never really fulfill their full potential. By any chance, you have that tweet pulled up, Kev?
I'm actually looking for it. I'm on his Twitter page right now.
So while he's looking for that, Smoove, can you just explain to people why it's so hard for offensive linemen to change sides, shuffle positions, and never really find a home at any one spot?
I mean, you see it all the time. I'll give you another example to look at. Take a look at the Giants offensive line. Andrew Thomas. We were pretty high on Will Hernandez and Billy Price a few years ago. Mm-hmm. I always saw Will Hernandez play left guard. Senior Bowls, whatever. He was on the left side of the line. If you watch them try out on Sundays, guess where he's at? Right guard. So he's struggling. I was high on Andrew Thomas. And this speaks to what Duke is talking about, but when I watched Andrew Thomas at Georgia, he was one of the most pro-ready left tackles I've seen in a long time. Like, everything about his game said, I can play in the pros at a high level. Then his rookie year, you watch him come out. Everything that he was good at, he stopped doing. And then as we researched and we dug a little bit deeper, we find out that the offensive line coach for the Giants was basically trying to unteach everything he had already learned from really good coaches like Coach Alexander and stuff like that. So, yeah, a lot of these coaches can't coach. No disrespect to our staff, but when I'm seeing these guys try out there every Sunday, it's just things I don't see from them that I need to see, and we don't have it. So, for one, I don't think we're being coached right. For two, when it comes to, you know, playing offensive line is like muscle memory. So, I think Kev brought it up early. He said that Moten's feet look bad playing at left tackle. The reason why that is because you have an angle to take in the pass rep, and you have to get to a certain spot, and you want to get to that spot in the most efficient way you can by taking the right steps and stuff like that. You can't turn around, look at the ground, and look at your spot and say, let me walk over here. It doesn't work like that. You have to feel it. You have to memorize it and take those steps, and that's how it works. It's very hard to do that from both sides of the line. It's not impossible, but Moten practices at right tackle every week. So the move from the left tackle, he's not going to master getting to that spot in the game. Like, this is something that he has to repeat over and over and over again, usually for a whole offseason. It takes a long time to get comfortable in those type of positions. And while you shuffling guys around, You got a rookie named Brady Christensen that can't get comfortable anywhere. We watched him in the preseason. Didn't we see him play left guard and right guard?
He played three positions, both guards and tackle, right tackle.
And then all he ever played was left tackle at BYU, nothing else. So you got him trying to master the steps and memorize the steps for three different positions. I'm not surprised that he looked bad as well. It is what it is.
Yeah, no, I think the thing is with pro coaches, you remember with Perry Fuell, I think one of the former players who seems to be out against him saying coaches get head coaching jobs and they bring their friends over and they're not really good teachers. They just know somebody in the league that got a head coaching position. So, yeah, I do think coaching in general needs to be better statistically at the college and professional level. So let's did you find that tweet, Kev?
Yeah, I got it right here.
You just read that before we move on to the linebackers.
Yeah, just to let you guys know, if you want to follow him, if you here's Duke Mannyweather at Big Duke 50 on Twitter. He says here, and I quote, this is at 3:21 yesterday. So this was why the game was going on. Says he was in Plano, Texas, but it says in Carolina moving forward, if 70, which is Christensen, and 72, which is Moten. If 70 and 72 are your offensive tackles, they need to flip Moten and Christensen. Moten had zero feel and awareness as a left tackle. He's setting as if he would at right tackle, which makes him susceptible to many things.
Right. So basically saying the same thing we've been preaching about, you know, trying to shuffle linemen and play different positions. It's just, you know, not as easy as a lot of people make it sound. So let's move on to these Vikings linebackers. Again, you got a pair of veterans, Eric Hendricks, a guy who's been a consistent performer in this league for several years. You got Anthony Barr. I mean, who knows what position he is? He's just kind of a tweener. Is he a pass rusher? He's not been very effective doing that. Is he a Sam linebacker, which they have him listed? So they don't, I mean, he's kind of a Swiss Army knife, you know, master, jack of all trades, master of none type of player. Kev, you think, you see areas where we can attack these Vikings linebackers? I know we've already played Eric Kendricks probably three or four times now since he's been in the league.
Yeah, I think we definitely can attack. You know, I had said that, you know, with the Eagles linebackers this past week. And, you know, when Tommy Trimmer got that touchdown early, I'm like, okay, yeah, tight end's about to go off, you know. You know, little to hardly any production after that. So again, you know, when I'm looking at, you know, these linebackers, I'm not seeing, you know, anything that makes me, you know, quiver at my feet and think can't take advantage of. You know, with Anthony Barr, you know, he's been there for several years. You know, with the Vikings, you know, I definitely think he's in his post prime but still effective range. You was talking about Eric Kendricks. I think he's the best of the group, that middle linebacker. Vigil. Yeah. Honestly, not too familiar with him. You know, I'm definitely familiar with his backup. You know, somebody that, you know, we had looked at throughout the draft, Chaz Surratt, linebacker out of UNC. Of course, I was pissed when, you know, he went there. You know, it seemed like the, you know, Vikings just got a couple players that would, that I wouldn't mind have been here in Carolina. But, you know, Chaz Surratt, I just think that he's waiting his turn and opportunity. But he definitely needs to develop and grow as well because, you know, he switched over from playing quarterback at Carolina to linebacker and only played it 2 years. Played at a high level, made plays, but definitely room for improvement. But, yeah, I can see that, you know, again, if we decide to feature the tight ends this week, you know, with, you know, Ian Thomas, who seemed to be getting, you know, a lot of the reps along with the Tommy Trimble. You know, we're coming out in 12 personnel, 22 personnel. Even when we go to these jumbo packages, you know, it'll be nice to see some, you know, some play action. You know, let's test these linebackers out. I just feel like we don't attack linebackers enough, particularly with that particular position group. So, and then, like I said, if McCaffrey comes back, I can't see either one of them, you know, being able to check him out the backfield. So, yeah, I definitely think it's opportunities to again attack a position group that's respectable, but definitely beatable.
Yeah, definitely a respectable group. I mean, Eric Kendricks, I mean, has what, 5 consecutive 100 tackle seasons. He was a first team All-Pro in 2019. He's improved his coverage a lot. I mean, he's, you know, passer rating when targeted is under 80 for like the last 2-3 years. So he had 3 interceptions last year as well. So, I mean, it's presently one of the more better performing coverage linebackers over the past couple seasons as well. So, I mean, it'll be a good challenge, but maybe, you know, I think covering Christian McCaffrey is a big ask for any linebacker. Let's just be honest there. Now let's just look at this Vikings secondary. We know Mike Zimmer is always big on DBs. I mean, you got the Patrick Peterson, maybe future Hall of Famer right there at one cornerback position. You got Bashaud Breeland, just a solid vet. Pro at the other positions. So I think right there you got two big physical cornerbacks. You know, they play solid in the run game. Patrick Peterson can shadow your opponent's best receiver. This will be the third week in a row we'll see DJ Moore have a challenge on his hands. You know, we saw him, you know, have a good game against Trayvon Diggs. We saw him struggle a little bit last week with Darius Slay. I mean, the Eagles play a lot more zone than Dallas did, though, but Slay definitely had a big game. And this week we got another veteran, Patrick Peterson. So you better believe, I mean, you know, you see Trayvon Diggs and Darius Slay, I felt were both able to study Sam Darnold, you know, reading his eyes. You know, he's not really looking guys off. So they were able to kind of bait him into 2 interceptions apiece. So I think in back-to-back weeks, Darnold has thrown interceptions to 2 veteran cornerbacks in consecutive weeks. So best believe Patrick Peterson, you know, he's licking his chops. This week, studying what Darius Slay and Trayvon Diggs were able to do these past couple of weeks to confuse Darnold and bait him into game-changing interceptions. Then you look at their safeties. I mean, Harrison Smith, I mean, he's been one of the top safeties, most consistent players, you know, in this league for several years as well. I think, you know, in 20s, I don't know if he made first team all pro or not, but I definitely think he made a couple of Pro Bowls. He's a versatile safety. Can play in the box. He's got good range as a free safety, very physical player, a solid tackler. So I think he's a good guy that's going to have to be accounted for in both the run and the pass game. So overall, you know, the Vikings defense got off to a slow start this year, but I think they have played some explosive offenses like the Arizona Cardinals. But I think it'll be a good challenge for our offense this week. So we'll see how they're able to come out. So let's just kind of look at it from the global point of view. What do you think the 3 keys to victory for our offense this week to attack these Vikings defenses, Kev?
Well, attack this Vikings defense, I definitely feel like the advantages are wide receivers versus their corners. But here's the tricky part about it. You know, if you guys saw it, but you know, it was said that, you know, by Eagles cornerbacks that, you know, Robbie Anderson was pretty much lined up in the same formation. So they're pretty much sitting on plays. And it was later found out that in the interview with Rule, why Robbie was mad and he was upset on the sideline, which a lot of us, you know, seeing him, you know, really frustrated, was the fact that we're not running double moves because it's sitting on routes. Well, you know, when your offense, it just ties into what we're saying. When your offensive line can only offer 2 seconds worth of decent protection on pass sets, you know, what kind of double moves can be made to take advantage of it? So again, it all ties together. We can just get, you know, a second more block in to allow things to happen. I think that big plays can be made. Again, there's nobody in the Vikings back 7 that, you know, puts fear in my heart as not being able to challenge. Second part is, you know, we gotta get back to this run game. You know, whether we do it with zone, you know, which is what the principles of this, you know, Joe Brady, you know, offensive philosophy has been, is zone blocking. You know, obviously since we're not, you know, power man gap blocking guys, you know, let's try to do what our players are, quote, are supposed to be best at. You know, will it be easy? No, but I definitely think we just can't sit back and just expect Darnold to keep throwing over 30 times a game, because, as you see, what's he susceptible to? And number 3, you know, no more turnovers. You know, just point blank, you know, we got to stop losing the turnover battle here.
Okay, well, there you have it. I mean, I think definitely want to get the run game going, whether it's Christian McCaffrey or Chuba Hubbard. You know, that's one thing I liked about the Eagles game, giving Chuba those 24 carries. He was able to have his first 100-yard game as a pro. So that's definitely what I want to do, because I just don't think we're a team. If we have to rely on Sam Darnold to win games with us with his arm, I think we're going to see results like we did the last 2 weeks, where he just reverts back to his old habits and we end up, you know, beating ourselves with turnovers and interceptions. So, Smooth, you're back now. Do you have any other comments about the Vikings secondary before we move on?
I do. Like I said earlier in the when we started, on paper the team looks like a really good defense, but there's a lot of room for opportunities for us to take advantage of. I just think that their window is closed. I've been watching Patrick Peterson and Rashard Breeland take a lot of chances, what they're going to try to do against us. But they've been getting beat. And you don't really hear about that, but you're starting to hear it now. Patrick Peterson is not the guy he used to be. Breeland has been getting exposed as well. I think, again, it's going to come down to us giving our quarterback enough time to make those throws and get Robbie Anderson going. That's going to be the key to victory to me in protecting the football. We have to protect the football. We can't put our defense in compromising situations like we've been doing. We can't have situations where Dante Jackson goes and gets you the football twice and you do nothing with it. Like, we got to take advantage of opportunities. That's going to be the second key. And the third key is just to get back winning. You know, you don't want to get stuck in this rut where you're just losing. That's how you get losing streaks started. We got to find a way to win the football game. It's going to be a close football game. And like I said, you got to take advantage of those opportunities. You can't keep missing opportunities. I don't want to sound like Ron Rivera, but to me, that was really the problem for us this past game. We didn't take advantage of our opportunities.
All right, well, there you have it. It pretty much covers the Vikings defense. We'll take some of these questions and comments now. First one I wanted to look at was Cam Irving is expected back on Wednesday. So, I mean, with Cam Irving coming back, I mean, let's just deal with the facts and our unfortunate circumstances we're in now. Is Cam Irving our best option at left tackle right now, do you guys think? Or Stinson?
I do not. I had confidence in him. He showed a promise in preseason, but I think what he's shown us is what he's shown his entire career. He just can't get it done on a consistent basis for an entire season. I think that the wheels have come off. I think that you need to try to look at, you know, maybe moving Brady over to the left tackle and Moten to right tackle so those guys are comfortable. And that's the best unit to go out there. So maybe it'll be like a situation where Elfling, you know, you get back healthy, you can't get your job back. So maybe we'll go one more week with this unit that we had. Hopefully we get a better performance than what Cam Irving has been giving us, because, I mean, when I graded him 2 weeks ago, that was the worst game I ever seen him play. So maybe he'll have a chip on his shoulder. Maybe he wants to, you know, get some type of redemption for how he's been playing lately, but I don't see it, because he's the same player that he's always been.
Okay, the next comment. I was going to ask, what do other teams do? Do they shuffle half of the group around? I think it depends on the team. Like, you look at the Philadelphia Eagles, they only did it out of necessity and moved Mailata to right tackle. But they know Andre Dillard, you know, their prospect, he's a pure left tackle. So to accommodate him, they moved the other guy to right tackle, Mailata, because he's shown the ability to play both sides. But that was out of necessity. You don't really see that often from good teams like the Eagles, the Cowboys. Typically, you don't see a lot of that shuffling. On the flip side, we look at the Raiders, who just fired their coach for other reasons. I mean, Alex Leatherwood's played every four positions on the line already. Now he has to step in and play, and he's basically not prepared. So I think it's different league by league, but I think it does happen. And one of y'all can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it happens more than it should, I'll say. I don't think, you know, teams trying to shuffle offensive linemen and plug them here, plug them there, like it's musical chairs. Is that anything else you want to add to that, Smooth?
Nah, you hit it on the head. Like I said, a lot about playing the offensive line is just developing muscle memory. Guys get used to doing something well. It's not really good to change them up. You try to do it out of necessity. If somebody gets hurt, it's cool to have that versatility out of a guy where you can plug them anywhere. But for the most part, you want to put guys in situations where they're comfortable. And we haven't done a good job of that, to be honest with you.
Kev, you have anything else to add to that comment about what other teams do with their O-line shuffling?
Nah, I mean, y'all pretty much got it covered. You know, like I said, just we seem to be only one. Well, I ain't gonna say the only ones, but I just think this positionless football, particularly on the offensive line, is it's not going too well for us. So,
okay. Thoughts on Rule putting that loss on the defense? Yeah, I know a lot of people got upset over Matt Rule calling out the defense at his press conference. And I get where you're coming from. I kind of offer a different perspective. As a coach, you got to understand coach speak. You know, he's not going to get up and say, Sam Darnold's terrible. He has to play better. You know, our offensive line's awful. They have to play better. From a coaching perspective, when guys are struggling, you want to lift them up. So you want to tell them about the things they're doing well and try to build on those things. For guys that are high, balling, doing great, you want to bring them back down and say, you know, keep getting to try to keep them hungry, keep them active. You know, we can do better than that and keep improving week to week to week. So I think it was more a coach speak than him putting the loss and blaming the defense for it. You know, I mean, you don't want to see Dante Jackson, for example, get on super high on himself, start feeling himself and make mistakes. You want to keep these guys grounded, keep them hungry and motivate them to keep getting better and better every week. And when your defense is playing as good as ours, as a coach, what do? You got to nitpick a little bit to keep them hungry and say you're not as good as you think you are. What are your thoughts on that comment, Smooth?
I agree with you for the most part. I still think he was a bit drunk. I mean, same time, you got to hold guys accountable. Like I mentioned earlier, your defense went and got you the ball twice, back-to-back drives, and you did absolutely nothing with it. So that's always going to be an issue for me. I mean, I'm my personality type is I say it how it is. So that's not the approach I would have took with Rule. I'm not going to ever embarrass my guys for the media, but behind closed doors, I'm asking for more accountability from my offense.
In all seriousness, what's wrong with our special teams and blocking? We get a field goal block last week and a punt block this week that had us killed. Honestly, I think the punt block was just a good scheme they had, and we just kind of lost a free rusher. You know, I mean, and that's critical. I mean, I think I saw a stat today where 90% of teams that block a punt win for a touchdown and block a punt win a football game or something. So that was a game-changing play. But I don't think it was anything glaring. I just think it was just a breakdown in protection. But, I mean, everybody has to get better, even Chase Blackburn. So we'll see what adjustments they make next week. But on the good side, I mean, the kicker made 3 field goals, made a 50-yarder. So it looks like we have some more consistency at the kicking position that we need. And this last comment, I disagree. Don't say anything. His defense gave everything they had. Yeah, but I think if you read his whole quote, you know, he did give the defense credit. I think the club on Twitter, they kind of cut a piece of what he said out and made it seem like he was blaming the defense. He did give them credit. They just cut out the part where he said they have to get better at this, this, and that. But he did give them credit for playing an outstanding game and, you know, did give credit to Dante Jackson and those guys as well. Okay, well, that's all the comments we have for tonight. I mean, that's 1 hour, 10 minutes. I want to thank everybody for tuning in tonight. The podcast will be dropped on YouTube, iTunes, Spotify, Omni, all of our platforms, probably by usually on Thursday morning, so be on the lookout for that. Again, appreciate everybody for your support. Any final comments, Kevin Smooth?
No, you know, for me, just want to make sure we always recognize our fans, you guys that tune in, support us on social media. Thank you. Looking forward to seeing us try to get to 4-2 on Sunday and just 1 week at a time.
Okay, hopefully we don't get outnumbered by Vikings fans this week.
Got to get that home field advantage back. You know, it's hate week for me. My dad is a diehard Vikings fan, so he's going to be talking shit to me all week long. I hate, if y'all know, I hate the NFC East. I expect to beat them. And if you take a look at it, we've lost to the Cowboys and we've lost to the Eagles. A lot of my friends from back home have been giving me hell for that. I don't want to have to take it from my pops either. So this is like a must-win situation for me. Other than that, man, just keep pounding.
There you go. And it's a, what, 1 p.m. kickoff, Ken?
Yep, 1 p.m. kickoff. I mean, unless we get Fletch for some reason, if I'm not mistaken, most of our games are going to be 1 o'clock for the rest of the season.
All right. Well, again, thank you, everybody, for tuning in tonight. Be on the lookout for when the podcast version drops on Thursday. Be there on, hopefully, if we can make it to the game Sunday, show up, show the team some support, see if we can bounce back from this 2-game losing streak. Until then, keep pounding. We'll see you next time.